Hi everyone, this is Johnny Cowsey from the Door Foundation. You're listening to WGXC Accra 90.7 FM. Keep it locked.
Network, this is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
You've tuned into All Together Now. WGXC's regional look at the news from Hudson Valley and the Capital Region, from the Catskills to the Berkshires and beyond. I'm Tom Rowe, and today you'll hear all sorts of local news updates, weather, interviews, and more, plus community events and the song of the day on All Together Now.
This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable. All the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Michelle Curtis of Perling, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. The Times Union reports that there have been 10,000 reported cases of the flu in New York as of January 4th, much more than the 3,000 reported at this point in 2017. Almost 2,000 New Yorkers were hospitalized with influenza in the first week of the year, up 34% from the end of 2019. Officials called the flu prevalent in December, and healthcare workers who are not vaccinated must now wear surgical or procedure masks. Read more about this story in the Times Union.
Amelia Teasdale is reporting for the Columbia paper. The town of Kinderhook is now under the direction of Patsy Leader, its first female town supervisor. Town clerk Kim Pinkowski noted there are now more women than men serving on the Kinderhook Town Board. Pinkowski said of the women at the board's table, and I quote, "There are four of us up here. This is going to be a great board," end quote. She later added, and I quote, "It's refreshing to have more women than men," end quote. At the January 6th meeting, Leader appointed Deborah Johnson to fill her former seat during the coming year. Leader said she was honored to be elected to the position, and I quote, "as a community person," end quote, and that she hoped the community would work together. The board reappointed Laureen Dawes for a full term on the Zoning Board of Appeals and Jonathan Cavagnaro for a full term on the Planning Board. Frank Gutto was appointed to the Board of Assessment Review. Former town board member Glenn Smith was named substitute building inspector. And Andy Howard will stay on as town attorney and attorney for the Planning Board and ZBA. The board also changed the time of its regular board meetings from 7 p.m. to 6:30 p.m. on the first Monday of the month. And you can read the full story in the Columbia paper.
Jeanette Wolfberg reports for the Columbia paper that there's been a bit of shuffling jobs among school and business administrators in Columbia County. Hudson Schools Administrator Sharifa Carbon is moving to New Paltz as Assistant Superintendent for Business in the school district there. Jesse Boehm, Business Administrator of the Germantown Central School District, will take her place in Hudson. That leaves Germantown with an empty seat. Carbon's departure is the fifth mid-year turnover in a major administrative position in the Hudson City School District. The city schools have lost high school principal Antonio Abital, replaced by administrator Robert Lacoste. He was replaced by William Wood. Junior high associate principal Alyssa Sabatino was replaced by Sean Briscoe. And elementary school associate principal Lisa Rood was replaced by Amanda Kloppett. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper.
Amanda Purcell is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Hudson Mayor Kamal Johnson has named his aide, Michael Chimides, to serve as the city's coordinator for matters related to the Americans with Disabilities Act. Common Council President Thomas DiPietro made the announcement at the January 13th meeting of the Common Council. Chimides will be paid $5,000 in addition to his $30,000 salary as mayor's aide for the extra duties. Funds were set aside as part of the contingency budget during budget talks last year. Chimides said, and I quote, "I want to create a shared culture and commitment to accessibility. We need all City of Hudson departments to be aware of opportunities to improve and actively contribute to solutions," end quote. The ADA prohibits discrimination against individuals with disabilities in public spaces, including jobs, schools, transportation, and all public and private places that are open to the general public. Under the ADA, public entities with 50 or more employees must designate an employee to coordinate compliance. Editors note, DiPietro is an active volunteer WGXC programmer. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com.
Sarah Trafton reports for Columbia Green Media that after a fatal crash in 2011 and a non-fatal accident in 2016, the entrance to the Cara-Durham schools on Route 145 are getting signs to slow down drivers. Local officials wanted a turn lane or more efforts to slow down drivers. Quote, "This is not the solution we hoped for, but it is a solution," unquote, Cara legislator Harry Lennon said. Cara legislator William Lawrence used to teach at the school. Quote, "The Department of Transportation did not feel there were enough accidents there to warrant a turning lane," unquote, he said. After the 2011 accident, the DOT did lower the speed limit from 55 to 45 miles per hour and eliminate the passing lane in front of the school. Now they are getting signs that show drivers how fast they are moving. DOT studies of the road in 2015 showed between 4,000 and 10,000 drivers passing the school each day. Of those, about 15% go faster than 58 miles per hour. The speed signs will be installed in the spring, but don't remedy the blind spot on the north side of the intersection. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting Allegiant Air has announced it is adding two more nonstop destinations from New York Stewart International Airport beginning on May 20th. The airline will operate two weekly flights to Savannah, Georgia and Hilton Head, South Carolina. Following day, May 21st, the airport will start twice weekly nonstop flights to Walton Beach, Florida. Allegiant currently flies from Stewart to four locations, one in South Carolina and four in Florida. Drew Wells, Allegiant Vice President of Planning and Revenue, said, and I quote, "We know area travelers will enjoy ultra-low-cost, convenient nonstop flights to visit the beautiful beaches," end quote. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com.
Chad Arnold reports in the Poughkeepsie Journal that Dutchess County Sheriff Butch Anderson was among six elected officials announced January 15th named honorary state chairs for President Donald Trump's re-election team in New York State. Upstate New York Congressperson Elise Stefanik was also named as one of the honorary leaders of the state campaign. Stefanik defended the president during some of the U.S. House impeachment hearings in December. Anderson did the same job advising the campaign in 2016. Quote, "What I did was I spoke at different events around the state," unquote, Anderson said. Quote, "I assume I'll be doing the same thing. It's nothing spectacular or anything like that. It's just I'm an honorary member. I was 4 years ago, and I'll be there again this year," unquote. Trump is the presumed Republican nominee for president, but could be removed from office if convicted in the U.S. Senate trial that begins January 21st. Read more about this story in the Poughkeepsie Journal.
Rebecca Carballo is reporting for the Times Union. Dozens of people rallied at the state capitol January 14th in support of the Protect Our Courts Act legislation that would forbid U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement arrests without judicial warrant in or around courthouses in the state of New York. The rally was organized by the Immigrant Defense Project. State Senator Brad Holliman, a Manhattan Democrat, and Assemblymember Michelle Salagas, a Democrat from Elmar, are the bill's lead sponsors. The bill was put up at the end of the 2017 legislative session, and Salagas said they spent time last year garnering support for the bill. She is confident it will pass this year. Salagas told the Times Union, and I quote, "At the end of the day, this is the year. I can't look at what happened last year. We have to look forward and believe we can get this done," end quote. Read the full story in the Times Union.
On January 15th, both Hudson Valley Democrats Paul Tonko and Antonio Delgado voted to move the impeachment to a trial in the U.S. Senate. Tonko, who represents the 20th Congressional District, and Delgado, who represents the 19th District, both also voted for the two articles of impeachment in December. The vote to send impeachment to the Senate was 228 to 193, almost entirely on party lines. The Senate trial will start on January 21st.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, a chance of rain and snow, mainly before 2 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a high near 40 degrees. Thursday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 12 degrees, but wind chill values will be as low as minus 1 degree. And on Friday, sunny with a high near 21 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 6 degrees. And that's your weather update from WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Thursday, January 16th, the Zoning Board of Appeals of the Village of Philmont holds a public hearing to consider the application for an area variance by MEKN Holding Corporation for yard setbacks for a proposed subdivision of the property at 11 Elm Street, Philmont. Meeting held at 7 p.m. at Philmont Town Hall on Main Street. On Friday, January 17th, Dahlia Zedek, Hazel Atlas, Madeline Derby, and Peter Aaron perform at Tubby's in Kingston, starting at 8:30 p.m. For several decades, the Capital District-based Mark Gamsjager and the Luster Kings have been keeping the sound of early rockabilly alive. The Luster Kings are expected to be joined by other members of the region's rock and roll revival scene at the Elvis Birthday Bash at Club Helsinki in Hudson, starting at 9 p.m. On Saturday, January 18th, Rick and Marilyn perform at the Hudson Underground on Warren Street at 7:30. Celebrating 25 years, Bindlestiff's NYC Winter Cabaret season has provided a stage for circus, sideshow, vaudeville, burlesque, and variety entertainment. The Bindlestiff Family Circus Winter Cabaret returns to Hudson with this adult show at Club Helsinki starting at 9 p.m. On Saturday, January 19th, the Catalina Chamber Choir performs at Trinity Church's annual Martin Luther King Jr. concert with tribute to Elijah Cummings. The Urban Choral Arts Society from Baltimore also performs, held at 88 Walker Street in Lenox, Massachusetts, starting at 3 p.m. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org/calendar.
Hi, I'm Thomas from Athens. You're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, ATRA.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
If only it was so
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, and Hudson, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Amelia. I'm 17. I'm also from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I go to school at MC Smith, and I am also from Hudson.
I am AJ. I go to school at Leibury, and I am from Philadelphia.
But you're living up here now, right?
Yes.
AJ's new to town. Hooray. You said you're living in Elizaville?
Yes, I am living in Elizaville.
Oh. Cool. Well, welcome. We're
it's
glad to have
variety.
You here.
A bit of variety. All of us aren't from Hudson.
Yay. Yay. Not that there's anything wrong with Hudson.
No, but
we love
it's
Hudson.
Cool to hear.
But Elizaville's cool, too. And Philadelphia.
Yeah.
But we're excited to have AJ with us here today. It's her first show with both WGXC and with Bound by Books. So welcome.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Before we dive into some more talk, I'm curious if you can tell us a little bit about what kind of books you like to read.
So I like to read nonfiction, but most of the time I just like reading fiction and making my own books.
That's cool. What kind of books do you make?
So I've been working on a comic book series, but I also write like short stories.
Nice. We have some other comic creators here.
Yes.
both Lena and yes. Amelia have talked about writing comics recently.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's cool.
I've started rewriting one I made in third grade. I don't know if I mentioned that, but yeah. I'm having a lot of fun doing that.
Are there dragons in it?
Of course. They're yeah. the only things I know how to draw well enough to make comics about.
Oh, well, I'm making one called Prom Dress, which comes...
Is it about a haunted prom dress?
No.
That would be really fun.
It's kind of based off of a song, except there are different characters called Prom Dress called by MXMToon. Huh. Yeah, so you should listen to it.
I think I'd rather read the comic.
But you should listen to it.
It is a fairly really good song, though.
Yeah, okay. It is.
But it's called The Prom Dress?
I'm pretty sure.
It's called okay. Just... Prom Dress.
Just Prom Dress?
No,
but without the just.
Yes.
That's cool. What kind of nonfiction do you like to read, AJ?
Well, recently at the library, I've just been reading the 5,000 Facts About Everything 2 book.
So you know 5,000 facts? Or you're getting to it?
Well, I'm getting to it. I've just been flipping through the pages, and I've been learning some facts about Harry Potter recently. Hmm. Do you know that the actor who played Ron Weasley in all of the Harry Potter films bought an ice cream truck with his earnings?
That's cool.
Just so that he Man, can get free ice cream.
That's what I would do with my earnings.
I wonder if he shares it with others
that's
or if he's
awesome.
Like, it's all mine.
I I like the idea that he like just took it and went on the road with the ice cream truck, like saw the sights while selling ice cream to support himself. That's like that kind of road trip is like my dream profession. Go around and like.
Do you think ice cream trucks in the UK? Because he's from, I don't know where he's from, but I assume he's from the UK because most of the actors in that movie are.
Yes.
Do you think ice cream trucks in the UK have the same annoying songs? I mean, they're probably different annoying songs, but do you think they also have annoying songs that they play?
Yeah. I don't know. I can't consider them annoying because I always they hear bring them you in such the distance joy. And I'm like, oh, ice cream. Yeah. I still react.
Yeah, but
I thoroughly react with like the excitement of a 5-year-old when I hear the ice cream truck.
Only nice. If they have cookie dough for me. I love cookie dough.
Ice cream is delicious.
I don't know, but like whenever like I'm watching TV in the living room because like what else would I be doing? Or I'm on my phone. It's like June, July, sometime warm. And I just hear the ice cream truck and I'm like, oh my God, sissy, take me out. And I just react like a 5-year-old even though I'm 9.
Well, the first thing that I do when I say an ice cream truck is I'm like, okay, first things first. Do you have any cookie dough ice cream? No. Okay. What Sometimes. About vanilla chocolate chip ice cream? No. Okay, then just vanilla. Fine.
Put some sprinkles on.
You gotta appreciate when people like appreciate vanilla because it's a bit of an underrated flavor.
I like vanilla in terms of like, you know, obviously I like an ice cream with some nice stuff in it, but mm-hmm. otherwise a nice vanilla.
Yeah,
then you
I like
can
to
add
have stuff you can
it.
Chew in it, like cookie dough and brownie chunks mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
Yum. Yeah. I have a fun fact.
Yeah?
What?
Tomorrow is Amelia's birthday.
It's great.
Yay. Happy birthday, Amelia.
I'm going to be 18.
She's going to be an adult.
I'm going to be a legal adult. I can't. I don't know how to do that.
Welcome to adulthood.
I don't want to. I get a refund on adulthood?
Just act like a teen until you're actually like 20, 21, and then you're like, okay, fine, me too. It's ready.
Aren't you excited to learn all the secrets of adulthood tomorrow? Because, you know, you get like a package in the mail that tells you
that
all the secrets.
That would make it easier, to be honest.
Can you imagine if everyone just got a packet in the mail when they turned 18 that was like, here's how it's done,
like,
people.
18 is the last like significant year in media and like books. Like, so what's going to happen? Am I going to go on my fantasy adventure now? Can I get shot into space and go on a cool sci-fi journey? This is the last year I get to do it. So where's my YA adventure that books and TVs have promised me? Where is it?
Wait, does that mean since you're going to be an adult yesterday, tomorrow, does that mean you're not allowed to draw dragons anymore?
No, dragons I defy anyone who says that. I will draw dragons for the rest of my life.
Okay.
I know they're not the same as dragons, but I kind of keep them in a similar category as dinosaurs. Ooh. And our good friend Sam J. Miller, the author, who's been on a show a couple of times.
It's him.
He loves drawing dragons. Oh, not dragons, gosh. Dinosaurs.
He told me that he loved drawing dinosaurs the one time I interviewed him.
Yeah, so I feel like if he can draw dinosaurs his whole life, you can draw dragons your whole life.
Yes.
Oh. You're going to be in like a senior facility drawing your dragons.
Who is Sam J. Miller?
He is the author of The Art of Starving, and he's actually from Hudson, so we've gotten the opportunity to interview him a lot. He wrote The Art of Starving, he wrote Blackfish City, mm-hmm. and those are the only
Destroy
two of his books
All
I've
Monsters.
Read. And Destroy All Monsters, I think, is his newest book.
Yeah, and then he's done some
and
short
stories as well.
And he comes
to the book fair a lot, and I love to see him there because... I don't know. He knows my dad on a first name basis, I think. And
he knows you on a first name basis.
He knows me on a first name basis, too. It's weird. It's like I'm friends with this guy. I'm like, yeah, I want to be friends with an author, and I've completed that dream.
So. He's a friend of our show, though. He's been on, three times.
He's been on three times.
Yeah. Imagine. And whenever I see him when he's up visiting, he always says to say hi to Amelia.
Imagine if he was, one day Amelia just walked into the door and we're waiting with Sam J. Miller in the studio.
I'd probably cry. I always get excited to interview him.
He's so nice.
His books are amazing.
He has great book suggestions, too.
Yeah,
I've read a couple
of
books that he suggested to me.
So I guess it's back to books now, people.
Yeah, book time.
Yeah.
We've been talking too much about other stuff. Now let's get back to books already.
Yeah.
I think I mentioned that I'm writing an essay for my composition and literature class on Fallout by Todd Strasser, who's mm-hmm. another book fair author that I'm a big fan of.
And you read that over the summer, right?
Yes, I read, not over the summer. I actually read it during the beginning of the school year.
Oh, was
I
it?
Read
okay.
Fallout. And I read Boot Camp also for a school assignment quite a while ago. And Boot Camp is, both of his books are realistic fiction, Boot Camp being extremely realistic fiction, that being that it's based off like actual camps that youth can be sent to, known as like boot camps or prison camps that parents will sometimes send troubled youth to, but they aren't actually treatment camps. They're known as to use torture methods and stuff like that. Mm. And Boot Camp was about a youth that was sent to one of those camps and came out of it very, very scarred. Had an its ending like was probably one of the best ones. And then Fallout didn't have as good of an ending, but it was also about just as interesting of a concept, which is if during the Cold War Russia actually ended up dropping bombs on the US and US ended up dropping bombs on Russia. So this kid and his family are stuck in their bomb shelter with an additional seven people. So it's a bomb shelter built for three, and now there are 10 people stuck in it. And that one had an interesting narration style where every chapter would alternate between life before the bomb drop and life in the bomb shelter. And that one was interesting to read, but didn't have as impactful of an ending, but was still a very difficult but very good read. And I think both of those books I got signed by him, and nice. They're very fun. Very entertaining. Oh, yeah. And the book I'm reading currently, I'm not gonna lie, I started off reading this ironically on a dare from a friend. It's called Bitten by Kelly Armstrong, and it is, I kid you
Why
not.
Why is it a dare?
It's, I kid you not, because it's a werewolf romance book, which is so far from my usual genre that I can't even like make a joke about it. It's so far off from my usual genre. I'm on page 46. Of,
are you in love with the werewolf yet?
Pages. Actually, the main character is a female werewolf, and it has a very, and so far the world building is what I find most interesting in it, because she is the only female werewolf in the world, and in the world there are 35 werewolves in total. So basically it goes into the recent chapter the recent chapter I just read actually goes into like the Industrial Revolution, how it impacts werewolves and how they had to adapt to a modern world and a modern pack like social structure. So I'm actually more bored by the romance portions of this book than I am by the world building. And something interesting is that our main girl character actually has a boyfriend at the beginning of the novel, which is something you don't see often in romance books. Usually the main lead starts off single, but she has a human boyfriend who doesn't know she's a werewolf, and she ends up having to leave him to go on her journey, which I thought was cool, and I really hope she stays with him, because I don't want this book to go in the cliched direction that she's going to end up falling for the man named Jeremy, who I assume is the male lead. I really hope she stays with her boyfriend, because he's a very nice guy from what little I've seen of him. And his family is also very nice, so I really hope she stays with him.
And he doesn't know she's a werewolf yet.
He does not know
point.
She's a werewolf.
Wonder if that will change things for them.
Yeah. This is part of a 13-book series.
Wow.
I cannot by any means guarantee that I'm going to read the other 12. Because I might
kind of have to now.
Is that the first one?
This is the first one. Yes. My friend loaned it to me. I have no idea where she got it.
Huh.
But we spent a really long time in my English teacher's class looking up the other 13 books, the 13th of which is called 13, because I can only assume she ran out of names. but yeah, so now I'm reading that, slowly but surely. I gave up on reading The 11th Plague, because even though my parents loved it, I just cannot get into it. Mm. It's very boring and very slow start.
Well, the book that you mentioned before, Fallout, actually, you said how it changed the narration?
Yes. The chapters altered the setting.
Well, that actually reminds me of another book that I read. It was The Homework Machine. I forgot the author. I think it was Dan Gutman. I forgot. But, so, it's part of a two-book series, I believe. So, it all started out with one person talking. And I assume that they were brought into this room with this radio recording, and then there were different people speaking for every little paragraph, and what you mentioned just remind me of that.
Huh.
Cool.
And another book that I'm reading, or rereading, actually, two books, was the original Annie book, and I'm also rereading Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, which is one of my most favorite books.
My little cousin, whose name is also AJ, full name actually Andrew, is really, really into the Harry Potter books. Like, to the point where my uncle will plug in audiobooks to play on the radio in the car.
The audiobooks are really good.
Yeah.
That's how I listen to them all.
I wish that I can find the audiobook to that, but so far I'm just listening to Magic Treehouse on audio, but that's it.
Oh, I used to love the Magic Treehouse books.
Oh. I never read those, but my nephew was really into them.
Very magical.
Yeah. I kind of, at some point, I want to reread Harry Potter, because now they have the illustrated editions, so I feel like that would be another way to experience
that's
reading them.
That's interesting, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know how they fit it in a book.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a
pretty big
such
book.
A big book.
Yeah, the book is like one huge square, and I have the illustrated version, by the way. The book is like one huge square, and sometimes the pictures aren't just like one picture. Sometimes it fills the whole page, and sometimes the pictures are just drifting down the sides.
Mm-hmm. That's cool.
I got the illustrated version at the library last year, and I did not like it. It was very boring.
The pictures or the... Because the story is
the
same.
No, the story, but, like...
I prefer the
picture,
movies.
I'd rather listen to an audiobook.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I like the guy, Jim Dale, reads the books for audio, and he's amazing. He does all of the character voices, and I don't know how he does it. It's really impressive.
I usually put on the Goblet of Fire for background noise when I'm drawing or reading. And I don't know why I always specifically put on the Goblet of Fire. Maybe it's because I'm just so thoroughly fascinated by the idea of a school dance in a magical English wizard setting. I'm obsessed with that idea, kind of. But I did try to read the first book years ago, and I couldn't get into it. But I do like the movies, and the illustrations, the way you describe them, sound really cool.
For the Goblet of Fire, the Triwizard Tournament, I thought was, like, really cool because I got to, like, see what it looked like. And part of it you couldn't see, so you, like, half imagined it and half it was right in front of you. So it was also kind of like a challenge for me to imagine it to make it look kind of like what the picture already looks like. Mm-hmm.
That too. I feel like maybe I'd like the books more if I hadn't already seen the movies and could imagine, let myself run free with how I imagined everyone looking.
Mm-hmm.
And I couldn't do that because, you know, Hermione was specifically, I'm blanking. Actress's name. She also played Belle.
Emma
something.
What? No.
Emma.
There's too many Emmas.
What? Maybe it was
Emma.
I don't know.
Is it Emma Watson?
I think it is.
Okay.
I think so.
There's a lot of Emmas in the world.
Yeah.
It's a very popular name.
Like Hermione,
and there's a lot of actresses
Watson
named Emma.
And, you know, Ron was specifically...
That guy.
Ice cream truck guy.
Ice cream truck man.
But yeah, maybe if I had been allowed to let myself run free with, like, imagining how the characters looked more, I would have enjoyed the books more. But I couldn't do that because the movies were so widespread and popular. I don't know if anyone's taken, like, the Pottermore quizzes, but they told me I'm a Hufflepuff.
Me too.
Which,
high five.
Told me I'm a Gryffindor, which I'm really happy about.
Have you done that quiz?
Yeah.
I'm a Gryffindor too.
Oh, yeah. Go team.
Cool.
I like Gryffindor and Hufflepuff. I mean, they're all good.
I thought I'd be a Ravenclaw.
Not
yeah.
Slytherin.
I could see that.
My friend's a Slytherin, and she's really nice. Don't know.
Slytherin isn't necessarily bad. I know that it gets a bad rap because there's some bad people.
But now I can finally get all that merch that I see everywhere where it's like, what house are you? And I'm like, I don't know. I haven't taken the quiz
like
for years. And then I finally did.
2/3 of Slytherin are not so nice people, but the rest, the 1/3 of it, I think that Harry Potter, if he actually got to know them better, would end up actually liking that 1/3, which is only like 10-20 people.
That was like the one thing that I got really hooked on in the Harry Potter movies, the fact that like the Sorting Hat was gonna put him in Slytherin originally, and I'm just like, ooh.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Ooh, but then he didn't know. I was like, oh.
So I want to know what Lena's been reading lately.
Oh, yeah.
I've been reading a manga, which is the first book of Ruby, and it's good so far.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I already read it, but it's all good.
But you already read it?
Yeah.
But now you're rereading it.
Yeah, but
okay.
My favorite chapter out of this manga that I just love is that one where he makes cookies.
We're just talking about snacks today.
Yeah. Are we hungry? Have none of us eaten?
She makes cookies and tea and coffee and stuff.
That sounds nice.
And she gets scared by one of her teammates because she's just walking. And she just screamed for some reason.
I read this in the manga section of Barnes & Noble, where people used to be allowed to literally just sit down and read. And
they don't let you anymore?
No, they kick us out now. Aww. They actually, like, actively kick us out. So instead, we all stand and read, because if we, because then every time the workers come along, we just, like, put it down, and we look like we're shopping for the stuff. That's and then funny. Wait a moment, they're gone, where we open up the books again, and we're like, yep. But yeah, you can get into, like, some in-depth conversations with, like, the people you meet in the manga section of Barnes & Noble. Yeah. I've had some of my most enlightening conversations with strangers there.
Oh. I love manga.
Yeah. So, whenever we're at Barnes & Noble's, I always go into the manga section, try to find a manga to read, and we go and sit down at Starbucks, and it's
and you have cookies good. And tea and coffee.
No. my brother got us hot chocolate and a cookie. A chocolate croissant and a brownie once, because Starbucks is expensive.
Yeah.
They should lower their prices and then they'll have more customers.
I think they get plenty of customers, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Starbucks here, I don't think that can compare to the Starbucks in the city, because it's money.
Starbucks is in the city. It's pretty,
Wait.
Fancy. There's a Starbucks in Disney
really
World.
Really?
And that cost. Deeply upsets me for some reason. I don't know why, because it's like, you're in, like, Disney World, you're in Magic Kingdom, you're immersed in the magic, and then there's just a Starbucks up to the side. I'm just like, what's this doing here?
Yeah.
What is this doing here?
You should call it Unicorn for the Disney vibe. And then
I had,
like,
the opportunity to get the Unicorn Frappe. I searched all over the place, like, because so many Starbucks were out of it when it was a big thing, and then I didn't get it because my dad was like, we should wait for your mom, and I was like, okay. And I don't know if I would have ended up liking it, because it looked like, I think it was fruity, and I don't even like fruity flavors. But I don't go to Starbucks very often, but when I do, I always get, like, the mocha chip.
The only thing
I'm
I get is
basic.
The only thing that I get is the fruit and cheese, and then I'm like, got it, done, bye.
When the Unicorn Frappe was out, I was like, oh my god, did you see the Sis versus Bro video? That was when I actually still watched Sis versus Bro. And then I am over here while we're still traveling to, like, Florida, Myrtle Beach, wherever we're going on vacation. It's like July now. And I'm like, ooh, they must still have the Unicorn Frappe, because they had the picture up there, but it wasn't on the menu.
Oh, no. It must have been right when it was going out of, because it was a limited edition thing. Very limited. I'm just waiting for them to name some more drinks after mythical creatures. Where's my dragon Frappuccino?
That'd be nice.
I will buy it. I will buy so many of it.
If I find it at the Barnes & Noble Starbucks, I will alert you
immediately.
Yes.
You're our lookout.
Find it. Yeah, because, like, we go to Kingston every weekend, and we rarely go to Barnes & Nobles, but, like, it's only when I'm bored and I don't want to go to the stores that my family chooses. All they do is, like, go shopping for clothes, even though we have a mountain of clothes in our rooms. Except for my brother.
Before we run out of time, I want to bring it back to books. But I also want, we've been talking about Barnes & Noble for a bit, so I want to give a shout out to our local bookstores. Ooh. Spotty Dog.
Yes.
Fairview Books. Magpie Bookshop. What other ones do we have? Oh, and I like, there's a really nice bookstore in Chatham, too. I forget what it's called, but they have a really good kids selection.
Oh, I know what you're talking about, but I cannot for the life of me remember what it's called.
Chatham Books? I don't know.
Maybe.
Probably. But
maybe.
Chatham Bookstore,
right,
you know who you are.
Shop.
Oh, wait, we forgot to mention the libraries.
And the library,
true.
Of course.
We don't,
not technically
we don't
a shop,
generally sell books, although
well,
we do have a book sale coming up.
Oh, you have a book
sale?
Yeah,
in February, there's going to be a book sale.
Oh, okay.
We also have a free cart. So obviously you can borrow books for free, but sometimes people donate books and we don't put them all in the sale. We just put like,
the really
nice ones in the
sale. There are also those little
sale.
Mini libraries around.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think there's one
in Greenport
Park
of the building
and one
we're
in front of the police station.
I haven't seen that.
Just to mention Spotty Dog one more quick time, it's actually a coincidence that you mentioned it because I'm going to go there as soon as this is done.
Oh, cool.
Get some nice books.
Yeah.
Must nice remember to bring a book.
Yeah. I could talk about a book quickly that I've read recently. And I'm going to kind of like briefly tell you about two books because they're in the same series.
Okay.
And they're really cute. It's a comic book series for kids called Peter and Ernesto by Graham Annabelle. And the first one is Peter and Ernesto, A Tale of Two Sloths. So you can maybe guess what the characters are.
Oh my gosh.
They're two sloths named Peter and Ernesto.
Oh my God.
And in the first book, you get to meet them and they're the best of friends. And Peter is a bit of a homebody. He's a little cautious. He just would be happy to stay in his tree like all day long, like forever. And Ernesto is more of an adventurer. And one day decides to go off and explore. And while he's away having this great time, Peter starts to get worried about his friend. And so eventually leaves the tree to go look for his friend and make sure his friend is okay. And you meet lots of other little characters along the way. And
so
it's very cute.
I'm definitely Oh my God.
Ernesto. I love sloths.
Sloths are adorable.
And what was the other books you wanted to talk about?
Well, the other one is called Peter and Ernesto, The Lost Sloths.
Oh.
So it's the next book in the series, and it's really cute as well. And it's basically they all live in this tree, as we noted, the tree that Peter feels very happy to hang out in. And one day there's a hurricane and the tree gets blown away.
Oh, no.
And luckily they all survive. So yay, sloths.
Yay.
So Peter and Ernesto and their friends all survive, but then they need to find a new home. So they're trying to find a great tree somewhere out there. And another animal, a bird, lets them know about a tree that he saw. But it's a ways away, so they have to go on a journey to find this perfect tree.
Can't they just replant the tree and just make it stand up?
They're sloths.
It's a mess.
It's a mess.
It gets demolished.
Stand up. Demolished tree. Get in the tree.
No, it won't work. But yeah, so it's about their little adventure to find their new home. And so it's Peter and Ernesto and a bunch of their sloth friends on this little adventure, and they run into all sorts of different creatures along the way, and it's really cute.
I'm definitely Ernesto. I love going on adventures.
Oh, I'm Peter. I'm a Peter.
I'm a mix of the two.
I'm a Peter because I just want to stay and read my book called How to Make Yourself Cozy.
That sounds nice.
And also watch YouTube videos all day.
Me on a constant daily basis. Yeah. So
I think I lean more Peter, I got a bit of Ernesto in me too.
I run and run and run and run and run and then I read and then I run and run and run and then I read and then I run and run and read.
And speaking of that,
that's my day.
We need to run and run and run and run and read and read and read because we're out of time for today.
Aww.
But thanks, AJ, for joining us. We look forward to talking with you more about books in the future.
I'm definitely going to come back.
Yay.
It's awesome here.
And we all wish Amelia a happy, happy birthday.
Thank you.
Yes, we all wish Amelia a happy, happy birthday.
And we wish everybody out there listening a lovely week.
Or a happy birthday.
Or a happy birthday if it's your birthday.
Yeah.
Let's just hope that there's more weather like there was yesterday.
Oh, yes. So we wish you all beautiful days and lots of quality reading time.
Bye.
Have a good week.
See you guys.
Happy reading.
Public News Service Daily Newscast for January 16, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. Lev Parnas says Trump knew exactly what was going on. That's the main takeaway from the Parnas interview with Rachel Maddow on MSNBC. Parnas is an associate of Rudy Giuliani, who represents himself as a personal lawyer for Donald Trump. Parnas added, "That's the secret they're trying to keep. We're on the ground doing their work." Parnas told MSNBC that involved getting rid of the U.S. ambassador to Ukraine, Marie Yovanovitch. Advocates for people seeking refuge in the U.S. are challenging Texas Governor Greg Abbott's decision to reject new refugees.
The move would bar refugees approved by federal agencies and vetted for security concerns. Ali Al-Sudani with the Interfaith Ministries for Greater Houston says the governor's announcement has created anxiety and fear for people with plans to come to the U.S. and families already here. He's also concerned about how the move will impact the state's reputation and the message it sends to the international business community.
Is this really how we want to be perceived as a state that is not welcoming? And I know for sure we are not. We are a very welcoming state, and I'm a proud Texan.
Texas became the first state to reject refugees under an order issued by the Trump administration in September. Governors in 42 other states have said they would accept new refugees. Abbott says Texas has done more than its fair share of resettlement, and in a letter last week urged nonprofits to focus on families already in the state, as well as immigrants and people experiencing homelessness.
According to a Trump administration report, refugees to the U.S. contributed nearly $270 billion in tax and other revenues over 10 years. And unemployment is down in 92 of North Carolina's 100 counties as of last November. That's according to data released by the Department of Commerce.
Overall, since November of 2018, the number of employed North Carolina residents has increased by more than 120,000 people. Department of Commerce senior economist Andrew Berger Gross says the unemployment rate signals the strongest labor market he's seen in 20 years.
When looking at some specific growth sectors, service providers have led job gains in our state in recent years, with particularly strong growth in professional services, restaurants, and healthcare. Though we've also seen some very robust job growth in the construction sector.
Last fall, Buncombe County had the lowest unemployment rate in the state at 2.5%. I'm Nadia Ramlagan.
Health care and social assistance are said to be the fastest growing fields in the state. That's according to the Federal Bureau of Labor Statistics. This is PNS. A federal lawsuit filed this week over recent changes to how safety inspections are handled at pork processing plants. More on the story from our Mark Moen.
In 2019, the USDA revised how inspections are handled at slaughterhouses by essentially handing most of those duties over to the companies themselves. Ryan Talbot is with the Center for Food Safety, one of the plaintiffs in the latest lawsuit. He says shifting that responsibility opens the door to foodborne illnesses.
It's safe to say that, you know, once you have the slaughter plant employees who have no mandatory minimum training or education requirements.
The USDA has said the changes are intended to modernize the pork processing system. Many in the pork industry also support the changes, saying they will bring more efficiencies. Last fall, several labor unions filed a federal lawsuit in Minnesota over provisions that remove maximum line speeds when bringing hogs to slaughter. That suit contends the changes compromise worker safety as well as food safety.
The latest suit asks the court to dismiss the new rules. A hearing in the lawsuit filed in Minnesota is scheduled for later this month. Finally, Roz Brown tells us there is positive news for kids in the annual data book released Wednesday by New Mexico Voices for Children, but the child advocacy group says significant improvements are still needed.
The data book tracks child well-being from 1 year to the next and found a slight improvement in child poverty rates in 2018. It also shows that child health insurance rates and preschool attendance have improved over time. Teen birth rates continue to decline, according to James Jimenez with Voices for Children, who says that indicator is important to watch.
A trend that has been moving in the right direction for many years now, and although we still rank fairly low in 44th, it is certainly moving in the right direction.
Overall, the data book shows that 26% of the state's children in 2018 remained at or below the federal poverty line, which made New Mexico 49th in the nation, a change from 48th place the year before. The report found that even more Hispanic children, 30%, were living in poverty, while the percentage of Native American children was still higher at 41%. While the state as a whole saw a larger share of kids living in high poverty areas, the rate worsened most dramatically for black children. Jimenez argues that New Mexico is not adequately providing opportunities for children of color.
We have to be a lot more intentional about ensuring that we are addressing the conditions that children of color are living in our state.
At the same time, Jimenez notes that Hispanic and Native American youth have seen the biggest improvements in high school graduation rates.
Voices for Children says they would also like to see lawmakers pass common sense gun safety legislation. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service. We are a member and we are listener supported, and we're online at publicnewsservice.org.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Graham. Chris Bragg is reporting for the Times Union when Governor Andrew M. Cuomo's office announced the hiring Shoshana Boulay as the executive director at the Committee on Open Government last week. It came as news to many of the committee's 11 commissioners. The administration had ordered that Boulay's hiring remain undisclosed until immediately before a press release was issued on January 6th. One of the members, Peter Grimm, the minority leader of the Rensselaer County Legislature and a Cuomo appointee, had no idea Boulay had been hired until he read about it in the newspaper. Boulay has served for 4 years in the Cuomo administration as general counsel at the State Office of Information Technology Services. In that role, she oversaw agency responses to open records requests and routinely wrote opinions in favor of delaying and denying Freedom of Information Law or FOIL requests. Bragg reports that Boulay ruled against the Times Union in 10 out of 10 decisions she issued last year to the newspaper. The Committee on Open Government is an office within the Department of State. In the past, its staff attorneys focused on writing legal opinions about whether state agencies are justified in their decisions concerning FOIL requests. The committee also provides guidance and opinions on other open government matters, including the open meetings law. Following the departure of the committee's now scandal-plagued former executive director, Robert J. Freeman, government reform groups pushed for a replacement that would be seen as independent from the state's political structure. Instead, Cuomo chose someone who, for the most part, has worked for him. In a statement, Boulay said she takes, and I quote, very seriously the role this office has in promoting an open and transparent government for the people of New York, end quote. Boulay declined to be interviewed by Bragg or to answer written questions about her previous work. She also declined to provide copies of her past legal decisions. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman or the Times Union. Joanne E. McFadden is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. Parents of students in the Ravina Coyman Selkirk School District have come together to form an organization to support the district's arts programs. Friends of the Arts was created, and I quote, to support, promote, and enhance the music and arts programs, end quote, in the district. The organization will collaborate with the school district to provide opportunities for students that are not currently available. Donna Hommel of Alcove, who serves as the group's president, said, and I quote, think of it as the equivalent of the Sports Association, but for music, art, and drama. End quote. Michelle McLaughlin, high school choral director and K-12 music and art curriculum content specialist, said, and I quote, this has been a kind of a dream of ours for several years for this to happen. The fact that it's finally getting off the ground is amazing, end quote. The group's initial focus will be on middle school and high school programs with plans to extend to the elementary schools as the organization grows. The group will offer to fund activities beyond what the school provides. One idea is to offer scholarships for private lessons. Another scholarship would send a student to art camp or help with the purchase of materials. The Friends may also fund field trips, participate in additional performance venues, and bring guest composers and artists into the schools, as well as provide support to school clubs and fundraisers. Read the full story at RavinaNews.com. WHEC-TV is reporting State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli has announced the property tax levy will be capped at 1.81% this year, a decrease from 2% in effect for the last 2 years. DiNapoli lowered the potential increase based on a lower rate of inflation. School districts can still override the tax cap with 60% voter approval. The cap goes into effect in the new fiscal year, which begins July 1st. Read the full story at WHEC.com. Kayla Harris is reporting for the Times Union. U.S. Representative Elise Stefanik has been chosen by President Donald Trump's re-election team to serve as an honorary campaign chair for New York. The campaign made the announcement January 15th. Stefanik said in a statement that she is looking forward to working with the campaign. She wrote, and I quote, "President Trump's agenda for creating jobs, strengthening our military, securing our borders, negotiating better trade deals, and lowering crime rates has historic support in the 21st Congressional District and across upstate New York," end quote. The Schuylerville Republican emerged during the recent impeachment hearings as one of Trump's most zealous advocates. Her role in those hearings put her own re-election bid in the national spotlight and got Trump's attention. Trump said of Stefanik in November, and I quote, "A new Republican star is born," end quote. And that wraps up the WGXE News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXE.org. From the WGXE Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. And a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXE weather update. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a partly sunny Thursday afternoon with a temperature high near 41 degrees. The National Weather Service has issued a wind advisory for the WGXE listening area until 7 p.m. tonight. There will be a northwest wind at 9 to 14 miles an hour, increasing to 18 to 23 miles an hour in the afternoon, and winds could gust as high as 40 miles an hour. It will be partly cloudy tonight, with the temperature low at around 13 degrees, and wind chill values as low as minus 2 degrees, and a blustery northwest wind at around 21 miles an hour, with gusts as high as 37 miles an hour. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, sunny with a high near 23 degrees. Friday night, increasing clouds with a temperature low of around 5. And there will be snow Saturday, mainly after 1 p.m. The snow could be heavy at times. The temperature high will be 27 degrees. And Saturday night, more snow, mainly after 1 a.m. with a temperature low of around 27. And that's your weather update from WGXE 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Hello, this is Rob Gillis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month either in the near or distant past. On January 17, 1773, the ship Resolution became the first vessel to cross the Antarctic Circle. On January 19, 1966, Indira Gandhi was elected Prime Minister of India. She was the first woman to serve as Prime Minister. On January 21, 1976, the French supersonic jet, the Concorde, began service with flights from London to Bahrain and Paris to Rio de Janeiro. On January 23, 1849, Elizabeth Blackwell was awarded her M.D. diploma, becoming America's first woman doctor. On January 25, 1961, President John F. Kennedy conducted the first live televised presidential news conference. On January 28, 1915, the U.S. Coast Guard was created by an act of Congress. On January 31, 1919, Jackie Robinson was born in Cairo, Georgia. He was the first African American to play professional baseball. He played for the Brooklyn Dodgers from 1947 to 1956. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event that you'd like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
Trees, a growing solution to stormwater management on this current cast. If you've stood under a tree to stay dry during a storm, you know that leaves and branches can slow or even stop raindrops. Ted Andreni of the State University of New York's College of Environmental Science and Forestry says in a drizzle,
the canopy can capture nearly all of them.
Many of those captured raindrops evaporate off the tree leaves, but even the rain that does make its way through the canopy is unlikely to pool or run directly